I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's September 28th, and we have a lot to talk about. And one of the things we'll be talking about today are last week's announcements from the CDC about COVID-19 boosters. If you're feeling a little confused by the flurry of announcements that we've seen and heard over the past month, if you're not sure whether you qualify for a third vaccine dose because you may be immunocompromised, or whether you qualify for a booster, which is a whole different list of folks, well, then you're listening to the right podcast. My guest today is Dr. Amit Bar-Or, the chief of the Division of Multiple Sclerosis and Related Disorders and the director of the Center for Neuroinflammation and Experimental Therapeutics at the University of Pennsylvania. And Dr. Bar-Or is here to give us an update on who qualifies for a third vaccine dose, who qualifies for a booster, and he'll share the somewhat surprising results of the study that his lab recently published, looking at the immune response following COVID-19 vaccinations in people who are living with MS and on B-cell depleting therapies like Ocrevus and Rituxan. So if you're on Ocrevus and you're concerned about how effective your COVID-19 vaccination might be, or you aren't sure whether having MS qualifies you as being immunocompromised, or you can't begin to figure out whether you qualify to receive a COVID-19 booster, get ready to have your questions answered. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Amit Bar-Or, there are a few other things that you should know about. As the COVID-19 pandemic is a global pandemic, other countries are wrestling with many of the same or similar issues. Joining the U.S. in announcing its vaccine booster program, the National Health Service in the United Kingdom announced their booster program, and in the UK, people over the age of 16 who are living with MS will be given a booster. The decision follows a recommendation by the country's Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization, stating that booster shots should be offered to everyone older than 50, to frontline healthcare workers, to people living in nursing homes, and to younger adults with health conditions, including MS. Interestingly, the committee recommended that the Pfizer vaccine should be the first choice for booster shots, regardless of which vaccine you originally received. If the Pfizer vaccine isn't available, the recommendation is to use a half dose of the Moderna vaccine. And if a patient can't tolerate either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines due to health reasons like allergies, then the AstraZeneca vaccine is the next choice. So if you're living with MS in the UK, you can expect to be contacted by the NHS to arrange for your vaccine booster. They're even going to try to coordinate those appointments so that you can receive your seasonal flu shot at the same time. And if you have any concerns about the effects of the flu vaccine on people with MS, you'll want to hear what my guest, Dr. Bar-Or, has to say on that subject in just a few minutes. The European Medicines Agency's Committee for Medicinal Products for Human Use is recommending that Vumerity, an oral disease-modifying therapy for treating relapsing-remitting MS, be approved and made available throughout the European Union. The EMA committee's recommendation has been submitted to the European Commission, which is expected to follow that recommendation in making their final decision. Vumerity received FDA approval in the United States in late 2019, and we're glad to report this potentially good news for everyone living with MS in the countries that make up the European Union. Research has shown that up to 75% of the people living with MS will at some point experience bladder-related health issues. Often that bladder issue is diagnosed as neurogenic overactive bladder, a condition where the bladder becomes overly active due to bad messaging in the nervous system, which causes the muscle that surrounds the bladder to squeeze too much. As you can imagine, this is something that can negatively impact anyone's quality of life. And the good news is that newly published results of a study show that there may be a solution, and it's a drug that's already been approved and on the market for more than a decade. A research team in Greece studied 124 people with overactive bladder. Now, about 25% of these study participants were living with MS, and the rest had spinal cord damage. And the study results showed that after 3 months of treatment with a drug called Toviaz, study participants showed statistically significant improvements in various measures of bladder function and, as you also might expect, overall improvement in quality of life. Now, because of the specific design of this study, additional research is probably called for, but these results are encouraging and they represent potentially good news for the majority of people living with MS who have to deal at some point with an overactive bladder. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. We often talk about depression and cognitive dysfunction on the podcast because they are both very common symptoms of MS, and they're the kind of symptoms that get in the way of fully engaging in life. We also talk about the fact that recognizing these symptoms early and receiving early treatment can make a real difference in quality of life. So imagine if one day you received an email or a text message from your iPhone telling you that you should contact your MS specialist because you're exhibiting signs of depression or cognitive decline. Sort of like a neurological early warning system. Well, that scenario is fiction today, but may very well become reality tomorrow, as Apple is working on technology designed to help diagnose depression and cognitive dysfunction. Scientists on the project team are using sensor data that includes mobility, physical activity, sleep patterns, typing behavior, and more to try and build algorithms that can reliably detect depression and cognitive decline. This technology could be built into future generations of the iPhone, a device that we already carry with us throughout the day, and a device that can already collect amazing amounts of data. So the work is going to be in developing those algorithms, and if Apple is successful, it can open up a whole new diagnostic pathway to treating any number of neurological and mental health conditions. We'll keep you posted as this fascinating work continues. And speaking of fascinating work, it's been nothing short of a fascinating experience watching the CDC arrive at some sort of consensus regarding the COVID vaccination booster. Since August, we've been treated to a variety of expert opinions and a sprinkling of official announcements that have left many of us wondering whether we qualify for a third vaccine dose or a vaccine booster, and no, they aren't the same thing, and then wondering what comes next if we do qualify, and what comes next if we don't. Joining me in a moment to unscramble the signals and help us make sense of it all is my guest, Dr. Amit Bar-Or. Preventing infections through vaccination has been a fundamental part of healthcare in America ever since George Washington issued a mandate for soldiers in the Continental Army to be vaccinated against smallpox. But for some people living with MS, there's always been some concern surrounding vaccinations, not because they pose any sort of danger, but because there's some misinformation out there and it's very easy to come across. And when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccines, well, this sense of concern has been amplified by an order of magnitude. Choosing to base your healthcare decisions on evidence-based science means choosing not to potentially risk your life based upon a rumor or a lie that gets repeated often enough that it starts to sound believable. Joining me today to discuss evidence-based science as it relates to the COVID-19 vaccine is Dr. Amit Bar-Or. Dr. Bar-Or is at the University of Pennsylvania and Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where he holds a Melissa and Paul Anderson Professorship and Presidential Endowed Chair. He's the chief of the Division of Multiple Sclerosis and Related Disorders, and he also serves as the director of the Center for Neuroinflammation and Experimental Therapeutics. Dr. Bauer's clinical focus is on neuroinflammatory disorders, mainly multiple sclerosis, and he runs a cellular and molecular neuroimmunology lab, which focuses on increasing our understanding about the principles of immune regulation, immune-neural interactions, and their contributions to inflammation, injury, and repair of the human central nervous system. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Bauer.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
I think I'd like to start our discussion today by asking you the same question that I've asked every expert that I've talked to about the COVID-19 vaccines. Are the COVID-19 vaccines from Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson safe for people with MS, and should people with MS be vaccinated against COVID-19?
So the short answers to both, John, are yes and yes. The history of vaccination and MS is one that, with almost every new vaccine that has come out, questions have been brought up as to whether the vaccine may pose additional risks to people living with MS just by virtue of them having MS. And the answer is that short of perhaps the yellow fever vaccine, for particular reasons that are irrelevant here, the vaccination history in MS is such that when one looks and actually studies and considers vaccines in people in larger numbers of individuals who are carefully understood in terms of their background and in terms of their MS and vaccination, that there's been really no added signal above and beyond what one sees in the general population. It's important to understand that any medication in any one individual could cause a problem. That can happen with Tylenol or with aspirin, medications that we do not think of as risky. And the same is with vaccination. There can be rare occurrences of adverse outcomes with any vaccine in any given individual, but there is no increased risk, as far as we can tell, in people living with MS as compared to the general population. And the answer in that regard is that when you have a pandemic as serious as SARS-CoV-2 and COVID, there's no question that everyone should be encouraged to get vaccinated and protect themselves, their loved ones, and those around them. And the same would be true for people living with MS, just as though they did not have MS.
You and your colleagues at Penn conducted a study of the immune response following COVID-19 vaccinations in people with MS who were on B-cell depleting therapies like Ocrevus or Rituxan. I know another study was conducted at Johns Hopkins, and there have been others that are developing similar findings to your study. So what are you and others in the research community learning about this?
Well, our study, like several of the others, looked at individuals treated with Ocrevus or Rituxan. So these are anti-CD20 antibodies that are given every 6 months. And they particularly target and deplete B cells of the immune system. These are the cells that are relevant in the context of developing antibodies. And there were already some initial small reports about individuals on this type of treatment who were not mounting particularly robust antibody responses to the vaccines, maybe even absent antibody responses. Our study looked at antibody responses, but also looked at other limbs of the immune system, particularly the cellular immune response, which represents a very important limb of protection to multiple other viruses through the vaccination. And what we found is that while people indeed did not mount particularly strong responses or even had no responses at the level of the antibodies, that their T cell responses were quite adequate, really no different from individuals who were not anti-CD20 or didn't have MS, and in some cases, even more robust. So the absence of antibodies was associated with an even more robust T cell response. So the first message here is that anyone who might think, because you're not mounting antibodies to a vaccine in this particular context, it makes the vaccine unhelpful or useless, the answer is no, you still ought to get the vaccine. You will get very important immune responses to the vaccine. We do know from the cancer world that generating these types of T cell responses, the CD8 T cell responses, are the important antiviral responses, and they protect in the cancer world people from getting very sick or dying from the SARS-CoV-2 infection and COVID complications. So getting the vaccine in this context is important, and one can also consider the important findings that help us gauge the timing of the vaccine relative to your infusions, because trying to time it so that you have the most robust immune system available to mount the response, and B cells are relevant for this, can also help shape your immune response to make it stronger and better over a longer period of time.
Well, this is really interesting because MS groups on social media are full of posts from people who are on Ocrevus, who went ahead and had an antibody test 4 weeks after being fully vaccinated. And the results of those tests in these posts indicate that they find quote unquote undetectable levels of antibodies. Given what you've just said, do these antibody tests even make sense for someone who's on one of these B-cell depleting DMTs?
So that's exactly why we are not recommending that people in this context go get tested, because it's fully anticipated that they will have very attenuated or even absent antibody responses. What's reassuring is that we now know, because we formally measured, that the very same individuals who have even no antibody responses nonetheless mount very robust T-cell responses to the vaccine.
Is there a way to measure how much T-cell response a person has?
There are some companies now that are beginning to offer tests for T-cell responses to the infection or to the vaccine. These are still, I would consider, pretty early days in this regard. As you may know, even for antibody testing, there still is some difficulty knowing sometimes what the numbers mean, interpreting the results given different reference scales and so on. When it comes to the T-cell tests, these are typically harder to do. They're harder to standardize. And the ones that are offered now may be providing some glimpse into the T-cell response, but it's not yet entirely clear that they're capturing at the T-cell level those responses that are actually relevant to the protection. So we, again, at this point, are not suggesting to people to go and study their T-cell responses in the commercial labs, but to consider doing it in the context of research studies that are formally testing and ensuring that those results will have the right controls implemented and help over time contribute to the knowledge out there.
Now, it's sometimes tricky to keep track of when announcements were made, but I believe in August, the FDA approved the use of an additional dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech and the Moderna COVID-19 vaccines for certain immunocompromised individuals. Does having MS mean a person is immunocompromised?
No, John. So there is no immune compromise conferred by virtue of living with MS or just having MS. The question is, do you have some other condition that may have you immune compromised and also have MS? Or are you on one of the MS medicines that takes away sufficiently the immune system to make you immune compromised? And one would even note that with the anti-CD20s, even though you have clearly lesser antibody responses, we do not see people being particularly immune compromised on this medicine, even with years of treatment. These are not people who are clearly developing many more serious infections or cancers that would reflect immune compromised state. And so people with MS, by virtue of living with MS, are not immune compromised.
So maybe a logistical question here. Can someone mix and match the vaccines, or does that third dose have to be the same brand of vaccine that the person originally received?
It almost certainly doesn't have to be. And we're still looking for the data to emerge that may tell us that having the different one, the other one, so to speak, is even better. We don't know that yet for sure, but we do have some early data coming out from studies looking at the same injection given for the third time versus the other, so from an RNA platform vaccine to a viral vector vaccine or vice versa. And the initial data suggests that either of those is likely to provide an added benefit as the third dose to those individuals who did not mount a sufficiently adequate initial response to a full vaccination regimen.
You and your colleagues are leading another study that's being funded by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which is part of the NIH, looking at the antibody response to that extra dose of an authorized or approved COVID-19 vaccine in people with autoimmune disease who did not respond to an original COVID-19 vaccine regimen. Can you tell us what the goal of this study is and why is it so important right now?
Well, it is exactly this type of studies and some others like that around the world that we're hoping will help us answer some of the questions we just referred to, which is what are the types of individuals who would benefit from a third shot? What type of third shot may be the most beneficial? What is it that we should be measuring in order to understand whether people have A, not mounted a sufficient vaccine response, and then how to measure it, depending on the medicine that you may be on, to be able to indicate that you have now mounted an adequate vaccine response. One of the nice things about this trial in particular is that it has what's called an adaptive design. The adaptive design allows us to address certain key questions, and once we've addressed them, we can roll over the study into the series of next important questions and so on. So we are starting the study looking at a third shot of the same vaccine, but the next step will include looking at the other platform vaccine, looking at people with other autoimmune conditions. The current study looks at MS and lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and a skin condition called pemphigus and others, but there will be opportunities for additional populations and populations on a broader range of immune therapies. And over time, we think will continue to provide very important insights into these questions.
When can we anticipate seeing results from this study?
We hope that the very first meaningful results will emerge maybe towards the end of this year, more likely the beginning of 2022. And that in part will guide some of the adaptive design opportunities moving forward.
Let's talk about the very latest news about the COVID-19 booster. The FDA just authorized a booster dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for certain populations. So who's eligible to receive this booster?
Well, the guidelines include language that indicates certain people should and other people may. Those individuals who the guidelines say should get a booster vaccine include individuals over the age of 65, individuals who are residents of long-term care facilities, individuals who are between the ages of 50 to 64, if they have an underlying medical condition that is thought to cause a lesser immune response or a more rapid waning of the initial vaccine response. These include conditions like chronic lung, chronic kidney conditions, being on chronic immune suppressants, and so on. So those individuals as well, even though not over 65, if they're between 50 and 64, should receive the booster vaccine, depending on if they have this underlying medical condition. Then individuals 18 to 49 who have an underlying medical condition along the lines of what I just mentioned, these would be viewed as may receive a booster. And I should note that in all these cases, the booster would be of the Pfizer-BioNTech, and it would be considered at least 6 months after having completed the full initial vaccination regimen. And finally, other individuals, 18 to 64, who are at increased risk for COVID-19 exposure or transmission because of where they work, because of their occupation or the institutional setting, and this could include healthcare providers and teachers, also are under the category of may receive this booster shot of Pfizer-BioNTech, again, at least 6 months after completing their initial series.
Now, are people who are living with MS considered high risk here?
Well, people living with MS are not considered high risk by virtue of living with MS. But there are people living with MS who would be considered higher risk. And one keeps in mind that these guidelines from the CDC and through the FDA are really based on considering boosting the vaccine response in individuals who would be viewed as being at higher risk of serious complications of COVID or death from COVID. Again, individuals living with MS do not fall into that category, although one of the things that has been associated independently with increased risk of severe outcomes is the degree of disability. And so if you have MS and you're living with moderate or more severe disability, this is one of those conditions, underlying medical conditions, that would qualify depending on your age, either as you should get it if you're 50 to 64, or may get it if you're 18 to 49 years of age.
Let's say that Bob received the Moderna vaccine and his wife Patty received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Now, both Bob and Patty are over 65 years old. Do they both qualify to receive a booster?
Well, so at the moment, the only boosting that's approved is the Pfizer-BioNTech, but the data for both Moderna and J&J are currently under very active review, and we would hope, and I think realistically, that those data and the decisions and guidance that emerge from those data will be coming out within the next few months.
Flu season is upon us, so let's switch gears and take a moment to talk about that seasonal flu vaccination. Should people living with MS get a flu shot every year?
Yeah, so the answer is that people living with MS should be thinking about the flu shot no differently than people without MS. And we certainly recommend that people get the flu shot, certainly if they have any comorbidity that would put them at risk of having a bad flu, similar to what we were just saying in the context of the COVID vaccines. And we also think of people who may get a very bad flu when they get it to get the flu shot. In general, we recommend all MS patients get the flu shot because we do know that infections can, at the very least, augment MS symptoms, if not in some cases, possibly trigger MS attacks. And being protected from infections in general is probably a good idea.
Can someone who's living with MS get the flu vaccine and get the COVID-19 vaccine at the same time?
So, John, it's probably okay in that there's no reason to think that one vaccine will necessarily limit the effectiveness of the other. But from the standpoint of side effects, if you were to happen to develop some side effects to one of the vaccines, it'll be very difficult for you to know which it is. And so if it's possible to go twice and get them, you know, a couple of weeks apart, that may be the better part of valor. But if it turns out that you can only access once, getting them at the same time is almost certainly okay. One keeps in mind that in the pediatric population, we commonly give multiple vaccines at the same time.
Well, Dr. Amit Bar-Or, thank you for all that you do every day to improve the lives of people living with MS. Thank you for bringing us up to speed on this constantly evolving COVID-19 vaccine information. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, John, for all that you do. And thank you to the listeners.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/213. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. Don't forget to check out my new 8-episode podcast series, The MS Caregiver Conundrum. In this week's episode, we're talking to two remarkable moms, each of whom is not only a parent, but also a caregiver for a child living with pediatric MS. You'll find the MS Caregiver Conundrum at mscaregiverconundrum.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.